Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, building the collective conscious. A show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. Oh, man, I'm so happy. Michael Eric Owens in the studio.
With DT.
Once again.
Well, we're back in the studio.
We're back on the scene.
Back in Blacken Studios. It's a beautiful day outside.
Man, look at the studio, man. Just looking. He's stepping up, right?
Okay.
Man, looking good, looking better every time we step in here.
After you seen that movie, Straight Outta Compton, you got inspired by Dr. Dre.
Oh, that's what it was?
To up off the production and
taking up,
so, yeah.
To take it up to another
level.
It.
We are feeling it.
So how you doing today?
Man, I'm doing beautiful, man. Everything is going good. No complaints.
No complaints. Well, one thing I can say, we're gearing up, of course, for the Ralph Ellison Foundation, February 20th.
Yes, sir.
6 p.m. at the Oklahoma History Center. Folks, this is a great night of entertainment, dramatic dance. We got jazz. We got readings from Ellison. It's going to be a blast. And the meal, it's a sit-down meal. Oh, man, listen, let me tell you something. You want to get served, you're going to get served that night, and it's all to honor Oklahoma, a great icon, mm-hmm. Oklahoma. Ralph Ellison wrote Invisible Man, one of the 50th greatest books of the 19th century. And listen, get your tickets. Mm-hmm. Go to RalphEllisonFoundation.org.
Do you have a quick little tidbit about that book? Because I was talking to somebody today, and they told me that that book was one of the first books that gave them like that wow feeling, like, man, what did I just read?
You can talk about Invisible Man on multiple levels, mm-hmm. I think creatively, I mean, his creative genius in the way he wrote the book, mm-hmm. in itself is a ride.
Right.
And so if you're looking for quality literature, challenging literature. Now, it's not something you just gonna get in and breeze through. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's gonna challenge you intellectually. But this whole idea of being invisible, mm-hmm. you know, taking this journey through society, where as Mr. Ellison talks about, that the problem is not with him, is with those who view him, mm-hmm. His gifts, his talents, his abilities never being seen or acknowledged, mm-hmm. in the mainstream of society, which I think, again, plays out very much today in the invisibility of a group of people that have been marginalized, just not blacks, but Hispanics, poor whites, women have been marginalized to the sides. Get this, to the periphery of our society.
And sometimes even by our own people.
Even by our own people, man. You know, you're not black enough, right? That's marginalization right there. Yeah.
I had a school counselor at one point in time, and we had to do this little like interest inventory just to kind of get an idea of what we wanted to do with our lives, what kind of interests we had, kind of the stuff we wanted to explore going into the future. And man, as I'm reading, and there are like, you know, like 200 or so options, you know, you just pick through, okay, I like this, that don't sound like me, you know, just going through the list. And when I finished, you know, a lot of the things that were on the list, I was pretty much interested in. And the counselor could not believe that this little black boy had all of these different, you know, things that he wanted to do or was interested in. And that kind of, you know, from an early age, and I don't know about anybody else, but I know one thing that about kids is that if you tell them something that they can't do, that pretty much motivate them to go ahead and do the opposite, or, you know, give them that motivation to go ahead and do that thing. So
absolutely.
Shout out to her. you know.
Yeah.
She didn't know, but it's like we get comfortable.
Ignorance is bliss.
With generalization like we talked about last time.
Yeah, yeah. And in coming up to the gala, we will be having somebody on. You know, I'm happy, proud to say that I'm the executive director of the Ralph Ellison Foundation, but we have somebody on, our director of communication. We'll be talking about Ellison in more depth. So we're looking forward to that that particular episode. But I want to bring up something that our listeners and DT, I haven't shared this with you because actually I just read it. Okay. So this is hot off the press.
Off the press.
But what has transpired is we had one of our listeners send in a message that on our last show when we talked about Jada Pinkett Smith, mm-hmm. along with Janet Hubert, mm-hmm. and they agreed with Janet. They agreed that, and they, you know, this person makes some pretty good points. And
I mean, Janet was making good points.
Yeah, and her point was, and I've heard people say this, and there is, you know, we can make an argument to say that Jada only came out because it didn't work out in her favor or Will didn't get the nod, mm-hmm. you see. So that's kind of, you know, the vein and through which she's flowing. Mm-hmm. And again, you can make that argument. What are your thoughts about that?
About Janet Hubert's response?
Yeah,
like we talked about, there are
that it wasn't personal.
I don't believe that it wasn't personal. No, I don't. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
But like I said, she was making a lot of valid points, but maybe not in the right context or relation to the Oscars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, we've known that the world has had its problems from the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we can talk all day about the people that are starving, the people that are, you know, unfortunate. But at the same time, this was the issue on the table about the Oscars, not about such and such and such and such, and her feelings about the way Will treated them back in the day.
And that's basically how I saw it too. Two separate arguments. But hey, I totally understand, because one could make that argument that what motivates you to come out even against the Oscars? The motivation was not why haven't they come out against, I've heard some others argue in the press, why haven't they come out against black on black crime, and why haven't they come out against, you know, and again, you can make that argument and be very valid in that point, because I think anytime someone steps up to the plate and begins to articulate something, especially as you know, that creates tension like that, and her views about the Oscar, you're going to get some type of criticism. And so I just wanted to share that with you, man. I love getting feedback from our listeners,
man. That's great.
You know, because that tells me they're listening. Check your email, brother. But that tells me they're listening, they're engaged, they have opinions too, and those opinions are important, man. And I, you know, although we might not agree, I respect that, and I thought the argument was a valid argument. But let's go back for a minute, man. I've been looking at this thing in Flint, and I've been hearing. You know, talk a little bit about what's going on in Flint for our listeners in Flint, Michigan.
Well, I was actually reading up on some current information that came out just a little while ago. And, you know, they're opposing stories that say, one, you know, this wouldn't have happened if it was a white town.
Mm.
You know, Flint, Michigan is 56% African-American.
Mm.
And so do we agree that If this was happening in, you know, some of the suburban areas, would it be handled the same way?
Well, I would say that it would be handled differently in suburban areas. But we have also known that in areas where poor whites have lived, they have been subjected to the same sort of treatment.
Right. And it's not like, you know, the water is not affecting white people as well.
Absolutely.
So I don't know how valid that is in making a statement about it just being about black people, but in general, as a human being, mm-hmm. who wants to be subjected yeah. to, you know, yeah. having a tainted water supply?
Yeah, yeah. And I think
it's going on so long, people yeah. are really fearful of what that entails for the future.
Man.
About how it'll affect their kids and being wow. exposed to lead poison and these yeah. other things that are in the water.
Yeah. yeah. And it was done from what I've been reading, mainly for economic gain, mm-hmm. you know, to save money. Mm-hmm. You would risk public health, the health of a community. And when you can't trust, man, think about that. You can't trust your local government mm-hmm. to ensure that you're drinking yeah. safe water. I mean, back in my day, you know, I worked for a company and I used to, part of my job was to travel around to water treatment plants and to look at their processes because we were trying to take a chemical and not put it back in the environment, but send it to somebody that could use it as well. So we were trying to do filtration with our chemicals, and the water that we were sending, we were very concerned about it. And so it is a process, a huge process. And when you think about the impact on thousands of people and how dangerous that is to public health, I'm just shocked that to me you don't try to cut corners.
Yeah, you don't
with stuff like that.
You don't do that, especially this water being, you know, one of the central essential things of life. You know, we can't live without water, right?
They say that the 21st century wars will be fought over water. Mm. Won't be oil, it'll be water. Mm. Access to it, man. And we don't understand around the globe how many people don't have fresh drinking water. And in the most industrialized, educated, most powerful country on the planet, we can't guarantee that our children are drinking safe water.
And that's a really scary thing to think about, more so that we don't control that aspect of our lives, where our water supply comes from.
No.
And so at any time, whether that be today in Flint, Michigan, in Oklahoma City, if anything happens to our water supply, at what length are we ready to deal with that?
Well, you're like you say, you're hijacked, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't run a water treatment plant. We don't. I mean, we don't do any of that stuff. We're just recipients of that. But I mean, the fact that these citizens complain and they were told, nothing's wrong.
They've been complaining.
Oh, nothing's wrong with your water. No, it's it smells a little funny, but trust me, you know, it's good. It's safe. You know. You know what I mean, man? Yeah. I'm like, really? You know, and it was that one, I believe it was that one doctor that brought it to their attention, and they tried to dismiss her as being, you know, cuckoo and
that's
all
another
this other thing.
Who gets to validate the information, you know? If I'm the one telling you, look, as a trained professional, as somebody who's looked into this thing very seriously, I'm saying that there's a problem here.
Yeah.
Why doesn't anybody grant that as notable or trustworthy?
Man, you would think that would send off all types of alarms. Mm-hmm. And people would say, without a shadow of a doubt, we have to figure this out and to make sure that this water is safe. You got people complaining. You got somebody in the medical field telling you there's an issue. There's high lead in the water. And you dismiss all of that because your focus is on you're saving some money. Yeah. I mean, the repercussions of that, man, is the loss of life and people being, you know, just disabled for life and having health problems for life. Is the trade-off worth it? You know, right. I mean, come on, man.
The implications are too serious,
man.
I mean, what could happen, you know, is way too serious to.
It outweighs it, right?
Yeah, it does. Definitely outweighs.
I mean, you just like, no, we can't. No. The water, we can't play with drinking water. The water that people shower in, bathe in.
Mix the Kool-Aid up in.
Mr. Kool-Aid. Boy, you went back, though. You know what I'm saying? Richard, you like that Kool-Aid? Richard's shaking his head, huh? But Richard put a little something in with the Kool-Aid.
I know. He always got a little special mix around.
special mix. But, man, let me tell you something. This is so disappointing, and I believe that there should be a high level of accountability. Some folks need to go to jail.
I agree.
I mean,
to have anything to do with that and to know what's happening, I mean, there definitely should be some.
Come on. I mean, some people,
some legal penalty.
Absolutely. Go to jail. You know, this is, the lawsuits are going to be astronomical, and already being a poor city, they don't have any money. I mean, it's, again, it's insult to injury, because the money that you're suing for is the money that's coming from the people, which is very little to even support, you know, Flint, Michigan. But, you know, look at the history of Flint, man. We don't have time to go into that. But it's this right here is just more emblematic of what's went on. And
there were
in
people here, different organizations that reached out to gather up water, mm-hmm. to send up there. And I commend those guys being able to do that on your own.
Absolutely.
You know, with your own resources and trying to stretch back to somebody else and help out.
Love in America.
Mm-hmm.
Love American style.
Yeah.
Remember that show? No, y'all too young for that. Some of our listeners with a love American style. Yeah, you need.
That's one of the powers of the new age. I can Google it.
Yeah, you just Google it. Love American style. But hey, look, we're going to take a break. Sit back, relax, stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Michael Eric Owens, co-host of the One Mic, One Voice show. Join us as we celebrate the life and literature of Ralph Ellison. A Night with Ralph Ellison at the Oklahoma History Center, February 20th, 2016, at 6 p.m. Sponsors of this event, Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, Oklahoma City University, Oklahoma City University School of Law, Fred Jones Family Fund, the Alliance for Economic Development, Center for Economic Development Law, AT&T, and Blacken Studios. For more information or to purchase your tickets, visit RalphEllisonFoundation.org or simply call 405-788-0566. Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious. Man, we got some guests in the studio.
We do have a couple of guests in the studio with us, and we're very privileged and proud to have them here with us. They're going to kind of give us some information just about life and the creation of life. So we're going to get started. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we'll jump into some conversation.
Peace and blessings, everybody. This is Nicole Deggins.
Uhuru family, and this is Bakir Tayahembe.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show. We're so happy to have you here with
cool
us.
Name.
Man, listen. And the brother looks smooth, too, don't he? On top of that, cool name and look smooth.
So we just had lunch, actually. We had a very, very powerful conversation just about life and birth and the way that women are kind of, I don't want to use the word ignorant, but uneducated on their rights as far as birth and the whole process when they go to the hospital, and how more so this process has a lot to do with who you are as a person. So we take it all the way back to not only just being about birth, but about who this person comes to be depending on what that process was like for them. So could you kind of talk about just kind of your expertise, your field, what you do?
Sure. That's something, how you brought it in, saying who we are, like how we are brought into this world, impacts who we are. And really, it even goes, that's absolutely correct. And it even goes further than that. It goes even further to when we are created. So the energy that we are created with. So are we created, literally, when we talk about making love, are we making love, making a human being in a love act, or was it just sex? Or was it a violent act of intercourse that created this life? That right there impacts the personality, the vibration of the individual that's going to come forth through the womb of that woman. And then as that woman moves through life or moves through that pregnancy, the energy that she has, whether she's happy or sad, whether she's stressed out, whether she is living a peaceful life, all of those things directly impact the fetus, the person that she is carrying in her womb, and then the birth experience that she has, whether it is a peaceful birth, whether it is a violent birth. And unfortunately, so many of our women, like 25% of women, are documented as saying that they had a traumatic birth experience. And that's,
what was that
women.
Percentage again?
It's about 25%, and that's across the country. For black women, that number is higher. So we are really, really bringing our children. Unfortunately, we're having not the blessing experience that we should have when we're bringing our children into this world.
And so we think about why my kids keep acting up. Huh? But it's like we don't think about, like you said, all of these different factors and all these different these things that contribute to, like I said before, who that child will really become.
Yes.
And the stress level that the mom is under, you know, whether or not she's in a quote unquote healthy environment, you know, all of these things play a significant part. You're going to have an event, and some of the listeners are probably going to be attending that event. But yeah, to talk about and educate mothers more on what that is all about.
Yeah, and really not just educate mothers, but really educate everybody, because this is a community collective thing. You know, we talk about that the proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. It really takes a village to help support the mother as she is pregnant and to birth the child, right? Mm-hmm. So it becomes so critical that we learn as a community that we have to start taking better care of our pregnant women and our moms. I don't know if you all have ever had a guest or have a conversation about perinatal disparities and infant mortality and maternal mortality and the fact that black babies are dying 2, 3, 4 times
Absolutely.
More frequently than Caucasian babies in this country. And preterm birth is a number one factor that factors into that. And we know now, science proves that the stress of being black in America increases our chances of having a preterm birth, which is directly linked to the number of our babies that die. And in fact, an educated black woman has a poorer outcome statistically than a white woman who never graduated high school. And so when we think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you outline the psychological stress that comes along with being black in our society. Unfortunately, something we live with day to day. And others in the city, like Linda Thomas, with the director of Minority Health, has been doing great work with trying to reduce infant mortality and others. I was part of a fatherhood initiative trying to get fathers involved in and doing the pregnancy and so forth. And but I mean, you bring up, man, you know, it almost when you look at the amount of single mothers in our community, you know, in the rate of poverty in our community. I mean, what are your thoughts on trying to, you know, just move this in a positive direction and, you know, getting folks engaged beyond what we see today?
I think I'm going to let my king jump in on that one.
So in New Orleans, we are moving with this effort to establish and develop what we call Little Africa, right? So we familiar with in different parts of the country, East Coast and West Coast, certainly, Chinatown, Little Korea, Little Italy and Germantown, all those
Greek
places,
town and all that.
Right? There's nowhere in the U.S. That I'm familiar with that where there's a Little Africa or a place that is dedicated to the commercial and cultural and residential prosperity of African people. So that is our intention, and it starts from, as my lady's slogan with Sister Midwife Productions is, birth something beautiful, right? So to birth something beautiful, it is our babies. Certainly it is our children. But our children, we have to be able to allow them to grow into a space that is totally intended to provide safety and prosperity for all of us. There's an African proverb that says, in the womb, the baby is the burden of its mother. But once it is out of the womb, it is the burden of the entire village, the entire community. So we you know, tie this thing of physical birth of our babies with the physical birth of our ideologies, our industry, our institutions, right? So I think what Sister Midwife Productions is doing in terms of educating our families, mm-hmm. like she said, not just the mothers, mm-hmm. because as men, we have to understand our role.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a certain mentality that we have upon going into a woman and planting a seed, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, it like you can't be a farmer who is throwing down, you know, like seeds without good intention, mm-hmm. to feed the people.
Yeah.
Right? If you just want to be a farmer and throw down some seeds, you know, yeah. and they go in the ground, yeah, they grow, but the fruit ain't like, yeah. mm-hmm.
And if I can jump in, that relates directly to like the single parenthood question, the single motherhood that you just asked, because when we as a people, men and women, both understand the value of bringing forth life, and we understand that whenever we make decisions to become intimate with someone, each and every time there is an ancestor waiting to return. Mm-hmm. So you are possibly going to be the one chosen to be the womb to carry that ancestor. So we have to be very mindful of that. And so we have to begin to instill in our young people. And when I say young people, I don't just mean teenagers. Mm-hmm. And it's not about abstinence only and that sort of thing. It's about really helping our young men and women understand the value of their spirits and who they are as human beings and spiritual beings, really, so that a young man will be more careful about where he deposits his seed, mm-hmm. so that he's not depositing his seed into someone who he don't like her anyway. Mm-hmm. Because if he loves her and he appreciates her, she will not be a single mother. Mm-hmm. And the young women need to understand that she should not be fertile ground for just any seed. Mm-hmm. And it is so imperative that we help our young people, our young 20-somethings, our 30-somethings even understand the importance of that. And I think that would kind of get rid of quite a bit of single motherhood, because you will love this person. And even if the two of you decide not to maintain your relationship, you will then be able to in a healthy way, mm-hmm. co-parent. Co-parenting can be healthy and good and okay, mm-hmm. when we have appreciation and respect for each other.
I remember you saying something when we're having lunch, is that the women should not refer to the guy as baby daddy.
Oh.
You know, and even in itself, just that term alone come with its own, you know,
energy.
Identifiers.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, oh, you just a baby daddy.
Yeah.
That imply a lot of stuff, like that you're not really taking care of that kid. You just,
yeah.
Participated in the process of making him. But, you know, I think when we're talking about the single mothers, and that some systems and the way that things go about, they're almost counting on the woman to come in alone. So that way, when they impose their ideas on her and they bombard her with all this information, she don't have anybody to second that information off of. It's just like, okay, well, she kind of probably weak, you know, going through all this stuff anyway. And it's like, yes. Now you come up with all these questions. I don't even know what to say. I'm just going to say whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I want you out of my face and I want this to be over with.
Yeah.
And instead of having a man there to say, look, I don't think that's the best thing for my child. Or
yes.
I don't think this is the best process for our children. So,
yes.
Let me offer another thought. My man DJ out in Atlanta, we talk about economics a lot. And, back to like the question about how to change the face of like single motherhood and what that means. We have to redefine what community and nation is to us. So one of the things that the European has kind of shifted our thinking in terms of dollar bills. So everyone wants to be a millionaire, mm-hmm. or want to, you know, be paid. And
yeah.
and one of the reasons why we tend to want to be paid or have a lot of money is because we don't trust our community. We don't trust the people who we love and the people who are supposed to love us. When in an African sense, a worldview, it's our collectiveness. We are our resources. Mm-hmm. The when you love somebody, you take care of them. You provide for them. You protect them. Right. And so, because dollar bills helps to replace that. It's a substitute for that kind of love.
That's why
and
everybody
trust.
Have a price tag. Huh?
Exactly, right? So, you know, when we think about our women, our sisters with our babies, when we start to truly love them, mm-hmm. they are no longer single. They may be single in terms of being able to sleep in the same bed with one man, you know, nightly or whatever, but they are not uncared for. Mm-hmm. We brothers, cousins, uncles, fathers will make sure that they are taken care of and the children are taken care of. And that's a different that's without a dollar bill. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And you know, of course in this system we have to use the dollar bill.
Gotta be expecting some monetary return on that. You want me to keep it for how long?
Yeah.
So yeah, man, I mean, there are so many different directions we can take this thing. But I think, like you said, it's really important to note that this is not just a problem for women. This is just not something that women should be concerned about. The brother spoke about us as men accepting our role in that process, you know, being able to take the responsibility and owning up to everything that entails, not just saying you're going to be there for the happy time, for the for the wham bam, you know. But that you know, by bearing those seeds, you know, you also have to take care of them, raise them up right, and so they grow into a way that you feel is most suitable for the reality we live in.
Yes.
So lay out the event that you have that you got coming up, and talk a little specifically about what will go on there and what people will be able to receive from.
Absolutely. So I'm very honored. So Bakira mentioned, and I didn't do a proper introduction of myself. My name is Nicole Deggins. I'm a nurse midwife. I have a company, CEO and founder of Sister Midwife Productions. And I am on a mission to shift the paradigm about how we give birth in this country. I believe that how we give birth can change literally who we are as a people, how our entire lives move. We can change the world, really, as we give birth properly and in a good, healthy, spiritual space. So tonight I'm bringing a lecture to the Oklahoma community titled Birth is the Revolution, because I believe that birth, while not the one single answer, there is no one single answer to elevating the vibration of our people, but I know that birth can be a tool in this war. We are at war. We are really at war, and I know that birth can be a valuable tool in this war to help us elevate the vibration of our community and shift the way we care about each other and that sort of thing. So tonight we're going to have a conversation, start off with a lecture. We'll do some conversation about what doulas are, what midwives are, but then what it really means to have a spiritual type birth and understand the metaphysical importance of what childbirth is like and what's happening and what needs to be happening.
In your opinion, what has changed? I mean, and of course, you know, we all have our different social influences now, but to you, what has changed in the people's perception about what it is to be a midwife, or what that all encompasses in comparison to how we do things today?
Yeah. So historically, all we had were midwives in America, particularly in the Black community. That's all we had were midwives. And they were revered women in our communities who took care of everybody. They took care of Pawpaw and Mama, and they took care of all of the women as they were ready to give birth. They ushered in life, and they also, many of them, ushered out life. So they were really full circle healers, and they were well revered and respected. Around the 1920s, separate Shepherd-Towners Act began to paint a picture of midwives being ignorant, being uneducated, and really made women believe that midwives were not safe. And in reality, hospital birth was not really safe, because particularly for Black women, what was happening is they began to become teaching fodder, and they began to be used for experimentation to learn how to sew, to learn how to open up a womb and pull out a baby and to sew it back up. Sometimes without even anesthesia, they began experimenting on us, all the while spreading the propaganda that midwives were no good. Now, the most interesting thing is that people get real nervous, because when they think about midwives today, all they think about in their mind is like that same old fake image of a dirty old woman coming into their house with a lantern trying to catch their baby. That's not what's happening, number one. Those midwives were very well educated and knew how to do things and knew how to take care of women. And in fact, they were taking better care of women who are now today considered high risk. They were taking care of those women, preterm babies, twins, and breeches, and all sorts of things at home safely with really good outcomes. The issues really around, people get nervous about, what about infant and maternal mortality was so much higher in those days? A lot of that was nutrition and hygiene, not because of the skill of the midwife. And so as we began to understand the connection of washing hands, and in fact, like childbed fever, that was not a problem for the black midwives. That was a problem for the Caucasian physician who did not wash his hands between a cadaver and a pregnant birthing mother. That's where that came from. So we have to really help people understand the truth of what a midwife was and what a midwife is. Today, midwives are available for women to do home birth if they should choose, and also hospital birth. Midwives are not always about only natural birth. That's a lot of people get scared off. I don't want a midwife because I want an epidural. First of all, quiet is kept. You probably don't want the epidural if you really knew all of the things that came with an epidural. But that aside, there are midwives who do hospital birth, who work with women who want epidurals and who want pain medication. So really, at the end of the day, a midwife is going to give a woman such a different experience around her birth process. And so as a midwife, I've been a midwife since 1999, and I recommend midwives only to work with women who are pregnant. I don't, unless you are high risk, not just because you think you're high risk. So let me tell you what that means. Today in America, if you're 35 years old and pregnant, they will stamp your chart high risk. That does not mean you are high risk. You may have a slight increased risk for certain disease processes if you're unhealthy, if you're not taking care of yourself, if you're not doing what you need to do to care for yourself, but that doesn't mean you're high risk. I just had my first baby 14 months ago. I am 43 years old, and I'm looking forward to being pregnant again, and I had a healthy, beautiful, uneventful pregnancy, natural birth, beautiful, and in fact, I have a couple of friends, same age as me, recently gave birth. No problems, no issues, vaginal deliveries, no nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand that just because they say you high risk don't always mean you so-called high risk. So,
wow. Yeah. And you know, like you just said something really powerful, because at the age of 43, most people are out of their, I mean, either done having children or have put that idea out of their mind.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you guys are over here looking like a couple of teenagers. Talking about being 43, but that's beautiful, man. And hopefully, you know, as you guys are able to expand this information and get more awareness out there, people will understand exactly what they need to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you have an enormous challenge. but you know, I not only see your passion, but I also, it's clear for me that you're up to the task.
And yes,
brother,
sir.
You're up to the task. And we need this so much within our community. We need to be able to teach, to educate, and to bring us out of the darkness into the light of understanding.
Yes.
So I just applaud you.
Thank you.
I appreciate you for coming on One Mic, One Voice. We, you know, we want to get it out, folks. Mm-hmm. We want to get that knowledge out. And if people want to reach out to you,
yes.
I mean, you know, they don't have the opportunity to come to the, you know, to your presentation, your training. How can they reach you?
Yes, yes. So I have, like I said, Sister Midwife Productions. That is S-I-S-T-A. S-I-S-T-A Midwife Productions. So you can find me sistermidwife.com. You can find me on Facebook, Nicole Deggins, D-E-G-G-I-N-S. Nicole@sistermidwife.com is my email address. Reach out to me. I do trainings. I do lectures. I travel. I do webinars. I love talking about this stuff. I train doulas. I could go on and on. I give free advice. Call me. Email me.
You need to write a book. Yeah.
I'm working on that. Okay, I'm working on it.
Okay, and great. And do us a favor. Go to our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice, and then go ahead and just post your stuff there on the page so that people can definitely, and keep doing that, because we have an international audience. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Wonderful.
I don't know if the brother shared that with you, but we all over the place, every continent, and every state, and so people will get the information, and we just thank you again for coming and sharing with us today.
Thank you for having me, for sure.
And that also, anytime anyone is in New Orleans. Y'all can come to the Little Africa.
All right.
We have a cafe called Black Star Books and Cafe in Algiers. That's on the west bank of New Orleans, and I'm there much more than, you know, she is, but 9 times out of 10 you're gonna catch one of us, and if you catch me, you definitely can catch her. So you know, we are here and there for our people in all of the best ways. So feel free.
Okay, so how long are you going to be here in Oklahoma City?
Unfortunately, only for today.
Okay.
We're passing through, and I just feel so blessed that Sister Jessica helped me put
Absolutely.
This event together.
Yeah, we will be back. Okay. I was speaking earlier. We had been having conversations about coming into Oklahoma mm-hmm. because Oklahoma is a black
history.
Yeah, that's the yeah. history here is you know like it was literally intended to be a
black state.
Black state.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I'm like, man, that so we are thankful to y'all like for even having a mind to invite us and have us here. So, you know, we're appreciative.
Beautiful. And we're going to be right back. Don't go nowhere, folks. Great information. Take advantage. Thank you for coming. We'll be right back.
This is Richard Taplin, host of the Black Box Podcast. Wanted to tell you, thanks again for listening to the One Mic, One Voice. Please be sure to check out their Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. And while you're on Facebook, go ahead and stop by Blacken Studios. Also, check out our website, blackenstudios.com, to find all the podcasts I record here, including the One Mic, One Voice Show, the Black Box, the Elijah Bailey Show, the Roxy by Design Show, and also the Gamer Stand Podcast. Thanks again for all of your support, and remember, it's Blacken.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice Show. Man, that was a great, great informational segment.
Definitely informational segment. Definitely need to get more information out there, put people on notice about what's going on. And that's just kind of what we do.
That's what we do.
So
inform you.
That's it.
We don't want you to be ignorant. We want you to have an informed opinion.
To be in the know.
Completely.
But kind of going into some of the dialogue we had with Nicole and segueing into what we're going to talk about with Mr. Holtzclaw.
Yes.
There's an immediate urge and necessary need for us to protect our women, man.
Well, you know, I mean, the attack, if you think about it like this, man, the attack on women throughout history, not just black women, but all women, but in particular, you know, black women, mm-hmm. You know, this need, you know, throughout history to subjugate women to a second class status, mm-hmm. man. You know, just like minorities, you know, they had to fight for the right to vote, you know. Yeah, I don't know if you see that progressive commercial that comes on, man, where you know, the dude is, you know, he's talking about, you know, what a man does. And she's talking about, you know, like, what is this guy serious? You know what I mean? Women don't work. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
you know,
and they're like going back in time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's like, is this guy serious? You know? But just think about it, man. Mm-hmm. There was a time when women were just completely, you know, marginalized. And now, you know, in particular, talking about black women and the way that they have been preyed upon. Mm-hmm. And we do know that this former Oklahoma City police officer, Daniel Holtzclaw, learned just recently that he will spend the rest of his life locked up or locked down, not going anywhere.
For the rest of yeah. what life is, huh?
Like we used to say when we were young, you know, you went to jail because you failed. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's over with. You mm-hmm. can't be raping women, you know, using your authority. I mean, this guy got, was it 263-year prison term?
Wow. He have to die twice.
Man, several times. I think he's gonna die.
And then gonna come back a lot. Yeah, like he'd have to live 100 years.
I think he's gonna die. They're gonna bring him back to life. You know, then he's gonna die again. Yeah, he's and you know, man. Again, I don't rejoice in the fall of anyone. But it's hard for me to even have an inkling of sympathy mm. for someone that preys on the weakest among us. I mean, you got what you deserve, player. I mean, that's just the reality.
Yeah.
I mean, you were out there, you know, using your authority, your power, pulling over women, calling down on them, using their arrest records against them, and committing all types of heinous sexual acts on these women. And you somehow expected to get away with it. Mm. I mean, again, man, it's diabolical.
And if he had gotten away with it, it would have continued.
Oh, he would have been. He still would be doing it right now, man. It'd be diabolical. And but I want to applaud Oklahoma City, the prosecutor. I want to applaud them because there was outrage when he had a all-white jury. It was outrage. I mean, you heard it on our show,
right?
And but we didn't take we did not take
as if that's a scene is unfair.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, we didn't take the stand that he was going to get off. We just felt it was not correct, and I still feel that with in the modern age, you should have a diverse jury. You know, in seated for each and every trial. That's just my opinion, especially in Oklahoma City, where you have a pretty substantial representation of black people. Mm-hmm. So, but I want to applaud, those jurors, and
they got this one right.
They got it right. You know, I don't know if we would, you know, on the scales of getting it right and wrong. You know, Megar Evers. No, I didn't get that right. Emmett Till. No, I didn't get that right.
It's not balanced. It's not balanced. That's what you're searching for.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, you're not going to get the balance in it.
So they did. They. You know. And again, we're in the reddest state in the union, the most conservative state in the union. What does that have to do with anything? Really, has nothing to do with anything. But you can parse that out to maybe some mentality that might exist in the reddest state in the union. But we got it right, folks. The jury got it right. Prosecutor did his and her job. And, you know, and the man has truly gotten what he deserved.
I'd like to say that I think in going forward with the way that we view people in general is to understand that we're all human beings. You know, I think that for a large percentage of people, they've let authority control the way they they act, the way they make decisions and all these different things. And the people who are in authority, they know that they can use these things to sway you because of the perceived position of this person.
Yes.
And so we have to be careful about even ourselves, you know, for the titles that we take on. And for what that means in going forward and trying to, you know, either help people or make decisions or you know, give us our best opportunities. Mm-hmm. Because if we misuse our authority, then it only waters down the systems in the future and, you know, into our things to look forward to. You know, how can I ever again, if I've been put in this situation, trust a police officer again?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To the level that I'll say, well, he's not like the rest of them. It's kind of like the rap that we get, you know, as blacks. It's like, if I have to come and, you know, be accepted by somebody, they have to themselves filter me out to say, okay, he's not like the other ones are.
Yeah. No. You're the damage that has been done because of one Richard giving what is that?
The power fist?
Yeah, the power fist. Yeah, that's back in the day. Yeah, he giving you the brother fist, the right hand of fellowship, I guess. But, you know, it is so true. The damage that is done by one individual, you know, that has done something that permeates to the psyche of so many other people. So now these women, you know, well, I'm fearful of cops, so I ain't gonna even So I didn't trip that way, right? I was going to say, now they fear for cops. Well, you know, I think a lot of us are fearful of cops. But a person in authority, And now you start looking at people in authority, and as you say, it diminishes that authority. And also, again, it's just abuse of power, man. And too much is given, much is required. And I think, you know, we have to carry out our, you know, our responsibility in a way that is professional and upholds the standards in which we have agreed to when we sign on for any particular job and location. But I will say, you know, the system does work sometimes, and it worked in this regard. You know, folks, they're out there. This is a police officer, but people are abusing their power right and left on the job and in our homes. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are abusing the power and the respect that they've been given. So we just need to do better as a society, DT.
No, you said in the homes, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, when I was a little kid and somebody in an authority figure, particularly my mother, would say, because I said so.
Yeah.
Is that an abuse of power, or are we cool?
Nah, we cool on that. Okay, man, okay. Because if you question that, the end result of that is pain.
Mom, so, if you're listening, I'm just playing. I was just playing.
Because, boy, you ain't too big for me to jack you up.
And that's exactly what she would say. It's not like I'm above a butt whooping right now. Right. But yeah, man, that's so true. We have to be mindful. We have to be serious about the positions we take and what that means as we go on to help people.
And, you know, moving forward, I mean, we've heard today what we talked about, things that are going on in Flint. We've talked about the fact of bringing life into the world. We've talked about this victory and the judicial process. Man, those are all, you know, some things that I think we can take away and say, you know what? There are people that stood up in Flint, did the right thing. You know, there's people fighting right now, citizens fighting to do the right thing. Here is a Nicole and her husband that are doing great things to educate people. We had jurors that stood up and did the folks. We can do the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm talking about here. Even in the face of some insurmountable odds, we can do the right thing. We can stand up against pressure, against naysayers. We can stand up and do the right thing.
And we can start with ourselves.
Absolutely. With the person, as what did Michael Jackson say? The man in the mirror.
Right.
Man in the mirror. Woman in the mirror. Child in the mirror.
We have to have another segment about that.
Yeah.
Just being able to face yourself, you know, just kind of having that kind of dialogue about who you are and what you're about, you know.
Absolutely. Introspectively looking at oneself with the desire to self-actualize one day in one's life. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. That was beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, brother got a little edumacation, you know. But you know, you're so true. I mean, man, we're in the 21st century, and you're going to hear us continue to talk about this in 2016, about what we can do to bring ourselves together, to be stronger, not just as one race, but as a human race, and to also move our country in a direction that lifts up the least among us. I mean, that's what this is about, fighting for justice, giving out information to people that desperately need it, overcoming the abuse of power in our society. Folks, this is done by individuals, right?
Right.
I mean, we talked about Dr. King last show. Individual. Dr. King wasn't 10 people. He was one person, right?
One person.
I mean, how can we, DT, as individuals, like you say, start with ourselves, but link arms with others, man? How can we come together so that we are not just a single voice, okay, but we are multiple voices, you know, speaking the same kind of truth and justice and harmony, brother.
As we know, there are power in numbers.
Yes.
But more so, we have to look at the type of numbers that are coming in, because everybody not going to make it. Everybody not going to be able to endure and go through what it really takes for us to get to that end. But if we have the right numbers of people coming in and standing together and pooling their resources, we have all the power we need to do whatever we want.
Like-minded people, like-minded people. And I
can't take 30 weak ones over, you know, five strong ones.
No, you can't. You got to get those that are focused, those that are up for the challenge to take it to the next level. And folks, great show.
Love it.
Let's
keep doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We definitely need to keep doing this. Probably, when we get old and gray and now I gotta look gray right now though. See Richard looking at me. Now, so probably when we get elderly, let me just say that, because a brother ain't elderly. You know, I like to say I'm mature.
Mature.
Yeah. And you're a young man. So even after, as DMX said, even after our pause, you will continue to do what we've always done here at One Mic, One Voice. Ralph Ellison Foundation.
Get your tickets.
Get your tickets. Gala, February 20th, 6 p.m., Oklahoma History Center. Go to RalphEllisonFoundation.org. Go to our Facebook page, Ralph Ellison Foundation, and make sure you get your tickets. You do not want to miss this incredible, incredible event. Because, folks, history will always speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.